10th, opening up a public hearing on House Bill 5012, the Department of Community Colleges Workforce Development. And before I invite up the Commissioner for Community College Services, Cam Preuss-Brawley, I'm going to turn it over to Steve Bender from Legislative Fiscal, who wants to talk a little bit about the paper that's sitting in front of us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. We have a couple of items that were distributed to you and are in front of you. Oh, okay. I'm actually feeling a lot better. A couple of items that were distributed to you today that are before you in response to questions from yesterday's subcommittee meeting. The majority of those responses are a report from the department of responses to questions that you had, and I'm sure that they'll be happy to go over any specifics that you would like to cover. One of the questions, though, was a response from me to a question that Senator Morse had about looking at the impact of funding on a per-student basis for community college students. So what I've done is I've prepared these two tables that I've distributed to you, which shows, the first one shows on a normalized basis, where 95-97 biennium is equal to 100, what the per-student state support, that is general fund and lottery fund support, has been. In this case, I put both community colleges and higher ed on the same graph. And you can see there that the blue line, which is community colleges, there was a sharp drop in the recession biennium of 2001-03. And since then, this number has been recovering somewhat. And primarily, most of this recovery is due to the fact that the number of students have gone down, and that therefore the amount of support per student, since there are fewer students to spread the dollars among, has been going up. In 2005-07, support was 17.5% above the level back in 95-97, and the co-chair's budget at the level they're proposing would increase that to 25.6% above the 95 level. The governor's budget would increase it to 36% above the governor's above the 95 level. The red there shows the same figures for OUS. I should note that the number of students in OUS that generates these numbers are not all of their students, but the fundable students. Those are the students that by public policy we provide general fund support for, and primarily what we're speaking of here are the Oregon resident students. So the OUS numbers exclude the students who are attending from other states, most of them. It doesn't include all of those students, it includes most of those students. Community colleges, we're looking here at basically all of their enrollments. They tend not to have a large number of enrollments from out of state in any way. And then if you prefer the actual numbers as opposed to seeing a comparison from 99-97, the next page shows the actual funding amounts per student. You can see the OUS numbers. 99-01, which is the year I've always been starting from with all of my other graphs, because that was the last biennium before the recession, you can see was a very high level of that for funding for OUS that the state has not been able to sustain since that biennium. So there was quite a drop in the number per student, and there's been some recovery since then. The numbers below are again the numbers for community colleges. Having given you all these numbers, I must add that we urge you to use these with caution. We're very concerned about the use of per student funding numbers, because we know that the actual costs to the colleges aren't directly related to the number of students. In other words, if a college or university has a 10% increase in students, we don't expect the cost to go up by 10%. We expect them to go up by less because of economies of scale. And furthermore, when you have a situation where there's a reduction in enrollment, as has been occurring at the community colleges, we don't think that a 10% reduction in students means that their costs have gone down by 10%. Again, because there are fixed costs involved. So in some senses, this would tend to overrepresent, I think, the funding to community colleges over the period of time when their enrollment was declining and underrepresented during the periods of time when the enrollments are increasing. But these are the figures that were requested.
Are there any questions or comments? To me, this is great evidence of you can use for how to lie with statistics. I'm glad the comments that you made. If part of the goal is access for students, and you're looking at, it tells them a mighty part of the story from my own perspective. So, but thank you for doing that because we asked. I just wanted to remind the members of the committee, if you can be here tomorrow at the beginning, because we do have one agenda item. There is a federal grant request. We need to do a work session. It should be non-controversial, but we need to get a quorum to do that, so I'd appreciate it. So, but I'm talking to people that are already here. Maybe the others are hearing. So, anyway, with that, I'm going to call up Cam Preuss-Brawley and Bill McGee, and we're going to continue to talk about community colleges and workforce development. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Cam Preuss-Brawley, Commissioner for Community Colleges, and back for day two. I would like to start today, as we did yesterday, but this time I'm going to introduce you to Kaylee Hunt. She is from Lynn Benton Community College, and she's going to actually tell her own story rather than me having to read it to you. Kaylee, could you join me?
Representative Galazio, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Haley Hunt. I'm here today representing Lynn Benton Community College, and I'm going to talk about the College Now program. I grew up in Central Oregon and was kind of a small-town girl, and I had a lot of roots in agriculture. I grew up showing 4-H and FFA, and when I entered my senior year of high school, I learned that all the stuff I had learned in the classroom from my ag instructor could be also applied towards my college career. I received several credits towards Lynn Benton Community College for stuff that I had learned in high school, which proved to be greatly helpful when I entered Lynn Benton Community College. And upon entering Lynn Benton Community College as a freshman, I didn't have to enroll in some of the entry-level courses that all my peers did. And they would ask me, Haley, why aren't you in animal science with us? Why aren't you in computers and agriculture with us? And I was able to tell them, oh, I got all those credits when I was in high school. And so this program has launched my college career into motion, and I just feel that I was greatly benefited, and it accelerated what I'm doing at Lynn Benton Community College. And so that's my story, and it was a pleasure to be here with you today. Are there any questions?
Representative Morgan.
Thank you. Thank you for coming here today and sharing your story with us. And I can't help but notice that you have outstanding public speaking skills. And I wondered if you developed those during your involvement with 4-H and FFA.
Most certainly I did. I was very active in livestock judging, where you have to give a comparative analysis about the animals you evaluated. And so that's where I learned a lot of my public speaking skills.
Thank you very much. And committee members, just to point out that those statewide are part of the Oregon State University budget, and we'll be talking to you about them.
Point well taken. Thank you, Representative Morgan. Did you, Ms. Hunt, did you engender a lot of resentment from your friends? Because you
to some degree. They were all like, oh, well, I should have done that. And some of them had the paperwork for it. And they're like, oh, and then some of them, the reaction was, oh, I did that too. I better go check in with registration and make sure I got my credits for that.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming here today. I appreciate it. Appreciate it.
Great job. She's a constituent of mine.
Oh, that's your constituent.
I just want you to know that.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, now that was much better than you reading the story, wasn't it? We hope to have a real live student again tomorrow. I would be most pleased to go through the document that you have in front of you, that is the responses to questions from yesterday. I'll do that briefly, but just to make sure that we actually heard your question and have been responsive to it. The first, on the first page, you will see a response to questions that came from Representative Barnhart and Morgan regarding adult continuing education and non-reimbursable courses. What we've pulled for you here is both what's in the statute and what's in rule, as well as some process about how these courses are approved and are then offered at a community college. At the bottom of page one, then you see the definition of adult continuing ed, and on to page two, non-reimbursable courses with some examples, so you have some idea of what's the difference between and among those kinds of courses. Next was a question from Representative Senator Devlin, about how many times the state legislature has ruled about reimbursability, and our review shows that it was the fifth special session in 2002. It's the only place we can find, other than in 1987, as we spoke yesterday when the department was first formed, there was some setting out of criteria and rules at that point in time. Senator Devlin also asked about tuition for the past 5 years, and we have an attachment that includes by college from 2001-02 in-district tuition fees, and then an annualized figure. I'm hoping that that, too, is responsive to the question. His third question was to have a copy of the community college distribution formula, and that is attached as attachment B. And that is the narrative portion that we use in, let's say, bringing new college board members up to speed with what is the distribution formula and how is it used. Representative Morgan then asked for us to disaggregate where the courses had been lost. That's the graph on the top of page three. Representative Morgan also asked for additional information about changes in program offerings, particular to professional technical programs. And we have information about programs that have been suspended. A college can write to the State Board of Education and ask that a currently approved program be, if you will, shelved for a three-year period of time. If they choose not to reactivate that program, it becomes deleted. And so they can suspend it for 3 years to see if enough students can come back and not have to totally rebuild the curriculum for the program. But after 3 years, our judgment and theirs is that it's best to start over, or at least hit the refresh button. So you can see that in the last biennium, in the last year, we are adding new professional technical programs at a rate that is encouraging. The last question was from Representative Barnhart, wanting to know a little more detail about key performance measure number 15, the progress of transfer students, and what we have added here is just further definition about how that percentage is arrived at. We are still working and appreciate the flexibility to bring back hopefully tomorrow, responses to questions from Senator Deckard and also another question from Representative Barnhart, which we were not able to pull all the data together to bring it today.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Questions?
Any questions? Ready?
Well, I'm going to start at the tab that's marked day two. Hopefully you will, too. I believe I'll follow the same brisk pace because there is a lot of information here. Again, I encourage you to interrupt and ask questions as they come to you. I'm sure you will. We're starting on slide number two with a very brief story of another student who found community college just the right answer So today we're going to walk through the CCWD budget. Yesterday was really context setting and talking about the drivers for the budget. Today I'll add a level of detail about the budget. Always asking you to keep in mind that, of course, this isn't just a series of numbers on the page, but there are, again, students behind me who are affected by this budget and your decisions about this budget. So today is the budget, quality improvements, review of our prioritized programs, and policy option packages. Page four is just an overall look at the budget. The majority of the Community College Workforce Development Department budget, 97.4%, is distributed to the field to provide support for education, workforce development, and youth programs. The remaining 2.6% supports the administrative costs of the department and the work we do associated with the programs that are delivered in the field. The governor's recommended budget increases general fund and other funds, but does decrease federal funds, and that's because our federal funds are decreasing. The general fund increase is primarily due to the $55 million state support for community colleges that's in Policy Package 101, which we did talk about yesterday. This package funds approximately the same number of students, full-time equivalent students, in the 9901 biennium. Page five, just a breakdown, further breakdown of the governor's recommended budget. You'll see the $816 million that's in the governor's recommended, $508 is general fund, $178 million is other funds, and $130 is federal funds. There is a total of $18 million. In policy packages, 4.5 of that would be retained at the state, and the rest would again be distributed to the field. Page six is a further detailing, if you will, of the budget. I'll note that, again, that 97% that is distributed to the field is about $800 million. And that does include the capital construction, which has caused some of the increase in the budget from biennium to biennium. Slide 7 is a comparison of the 2005 legislatively approved budget and the governor's recommended budget for 07-09. Again, the increase in general fund is primarily, in dollar-wise, not percentage-wise, dollar-wise, is, again, the Community College Support Fund at $55 million. There is a $10 million increase in Skill Up Oregon policy package, and there's $174 million in capital construction, which is other funds. So you'll see that that's why that particular shaded piece has increased. So let's talk a little bit about quality improvement and efficiencies in 05-07. Making note yet again of the 97% of the budget that finds its way to the local level. We're all about making those processes to manage that money as streamlined as possible. So most of our improvements and efficiencies are around automating the exchange of information and money that comes and goes from the department. At the same time, we need to ensure security and accountability of those funds. So it's not just that the dollars go out efficiently, but also that we are monitoring them. On page 9 are planned efficiencies for 07-09. This is work that we would all know as continuous improvement, so we're never finished with it. We intend to build on and streamline even more of our processes and some of the policy packages that we have requested that are internal to the department will help us do that. Page 10 is the organizational chart for the department. We have been organized in functional teams since 2003. We have currently 49.7 full-time equivalents, or 50 positions. And this is the team of people that I have the great pleasure of working with. And we monitor a budget now of $667 million. The personnel side of this organizational chart is about $7.2 million for staffing. $4.9 comes from federal funds. $1.3 is other funds. And $1 million is general fund. The staffing and the proportion of federal to other to general fund has been relatively constant since 99. Page 11 is a prioritized list of programs.
Ms. Porcelli, on the organizational chart.
Sure.
I'm sorry. Which of the positions are supported by general funds? I'm not asking you to go like every, you know, example, but.
Mr. Chair, what I would like to do is bring you back a chart. There is, I believe, only one position in the department that is fully general fund supported. All, I think, the balance of us are multi-funded. But we have a very colorful chart, which also gives you a proportionality as well as the fund source, which I can bring. So on page 11, the prioritized list of programs, this is also under priority tab in your appendix. It's, of course, a piece of information that you all will likely examine in more detail in the work session, but I wanted to make sure you knew it was there. Not surprisingly, as we spoke yesterday, the Community College Support Fund is the number one priority and is likely your most critical decision on this budget. Capital construction is the number two priority and continues to be a need across the state. Page 12 then takes that prioritized list and adds to it the dollars that are requested that are in the governor's recommended budget. The third and fourth packages are the packages around staffing for the agency. Sorry, Mr. Chair, did you have any question?
No, I thought there was a question, but I was wrong. Multiple choice exam, I got one wrong. Yeah, I'm already 0 for 1.
Yeah. Let's move now to results. So we talked about money, we've talked about priorities, and now let's talk about results, the results that you expect for the investment that you make. What we have done is framed our work around what we call 5 guiding questions. They all assist Oregonians in pursuit of work, life, and career. And they are reflective, these 5 questions are reflective of the educational enterprise outcomes, the PK through 20 continuum, if you will. But they are most focused on the work that CCWD is responsible for, our program services and activities. We're going to concentrate today on just the first 2 questions. Are Oregonians prepared for life, work, and careers? And the second, are Oregonians ready for post-secondary education and training? On page 14, I'd like to start with how well our citizens are prepared for life and work. The CCWD performance measures, albeit they are not the entire picture of how prepared are Oregonians for life, work, and careers, they are. We do have lead responsibility for some of these key performance measures under the benchmarks. And we would say that our work in this area is very important, as Haley just talked to us about. how it was of assistance to her to be prepared when she got to college. So we're using green arrows and red arrows to show you whether our key performance measures have moved in a positive direction or not over the last biennium. And the decrease in current worker retraining was at, I would say, a slight decrease. We went from 82.7% to 81.8%, so less than 1 full percent. Slide 15. I don't want to leave you with the impression that we aren't doing a good job, because when you look back if you look back at 1990, educational attainment in the state is rising. The blue line across this graph is Oregon in 1990. The yellow bar is Oregon in 2005. And the green bar is the U.S. in 2005. So when you look at that blue line and you look at where those bars are, we seem to be trending in the right direction. And we are. Educational attainment for Oregonians continues to rise, as it does across the United States.
Oh, yeah.
Thus, the first set of bars with no high school degree show that there are less people than there were in 1990 that have nothing more than a high school diploma. The second set of bars shows that high school diplomas, we have more of them. If I could talk today, I'd be all right. But Oregon has less than the national average, which is good because we want more individuals with post-secondary in the post-secondary categories, and so on. I think, as Paul Harvey often says, now for the rest of the story, is on page 16. Students today need an aligned, accessible education system. They are much less likely to follow a traditional path. Students today are often working part-time while attending college. In Oregon, actually 82% of community college attendees or students are part-time. Only 10%, is that right, 10%? 10% are full-time. The very small proportion of students that are, and over half of them are between the age of 18 and 24. So most of the students attending community college are adults who are part-time, who are working. So we actually think that perhaps the structure of community colleges has been flexible and responsive to this changing student population. Students are going wherever they can to find the classes that they need, often online, often attending more than one post-secondary institution at a time. Students need flexible credentials, and they need flexible ways to get them. An example of how community colleges are responding to students' needs is what we call a Pathways to Advancement initiative. And it's a series of connected education and training programs and support services that enable students to get the training they need to get a job. Page 17 is the mission statement, if you will, for the Pathways to Advancement. This began as a federal grant, and we have used federal resources primarily to support it, to ensure that individuals have access to demand-driven jobs and flexible training. The governor has stated that one of his highest priorities is growing Oregon's economy and ensuring that citizens have the skills they need to compete for family wage jobs. But as we mentioned yesterday, and I will mention again today, many Oregonians have been left behind in this 21st century economy and will continue to be left behind unless they can gain the language, literacy, technology, and post-secondary skills they need. We are attempting to move the Pathways to Advancement idea to scale. And if you would look at the continuum that's displayed on page 18, Pathways to Advancement is inclusive of bridging students' transitions from high school to college, from adult basic education, which is delivered on a community college campus, but is not of a collegiate level, to make sure that they are successful transitioning, and then among post-secondary, and from community college then on to baccalaureate. So all of those are in need of smoothing. All of those pathways could have smoother transitions. Another pathway is discussed on page 19, which are apprenticeship pathways. We've been working with the Oregon State Apprenticeship Training Council and the Bureau of Labor and Industries to do 3 statewide apprenticeship degrees that could be offered at any community college where there was a local apprenticeship council who had a need for those trades, and they're listed at the top of that slide. It's another way to make sure that there are skilled individuals across the state.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you. Cam, you've listed a number of agencies your department interacts with in fulfilling this continuum. I know that your agency also interacts with the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. Can you describe the nature of that relationship in terms of workforce development?
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, where to start? certainly, let me begin at the state level. We are members, Director Repine and myself, of something called the Workforce Policy Cabinet, which is led by the governor, which is tasked with making sense of and integrating and aligning policies from one department to another, particular to workforce activities. And at the local level, certainly economic development, both the state resourced individuals as well as the local resourced individuals are partnering together to make sure that they're either the build it and they will come strategy or the there is a company that wants to expand or come to Oregon. The community college and workforce development partners are certainly at the table as they put together a package, if you will, of what's possible. Is that close to what you're looking for?
Yes. Mr. Chair, follow-up?
Follow-up.
So, to summarize, how would you describe the development of the workforce development programs under the provisional authority of OECDD? In other words, are these programs that you develop jointly then as part of this cabinet and then select community colleges to carry out the work? Or ultimately, do you look at look to the business community to suggest programs and then develop them in response?
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, more the latter. We do look for I have the word, I just can't bring it out. We look to combine, if you will. We look for consortia of employers, so it's not single employers. A good example is the RV consortium in Coburg and Eugene area, where a number of employers came together. It was of significance for economic development that they came together because of the jobs. It was significant to us because the community college and workforce partners in that region also came together with the businesses to develop the training that they needed in order to have a very vibrant industry in that area.
All right, thank you.
Another example of career pathways is bridging high school students to work. I think Haley did a nice job of describing that. But in on page 20 gives you an example of work that Southwestern Oregon Community College has done. They also received some external funding to begin this work, but as you can see, they have definitely partnered with their local area high schools and businesses to ensure that students have the academic performance that they need to be prepared for life, work, and careers. So this brings us to the Career Pathways Package. It's Package 105. The governor's recommended budget is really a next step for this effort. Last biennium, the legislature did fund one full-time equivalent. It currently resides in the department. Its role is to coordinate the development of these pathways, these on and off ramps for students across the state. We have determined that although that's a very necessary element, we also need that at the institutional level. So that is what the request is for. And on page 22 is a look at what we believe would be affected key performance measures should that package be funded. Because this is primarily an under-construction effort, the colleges are currently building pathways and developing them with their local economy and business members. But we don't think we're going to have a lot of, we're not certain that we will immediately be able to show you a skyrocketing trend. But we do believe that once constructed, it will enable students, particularly low-skilled students, who simply can't take 2 years off of their life to go to school and will need smaller footprints and pathways to be successful.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Morse,
if you permit.
Sure.
Is the $1 million total funds anticipated to be used spread across all of the institutions, and it's done at the consolidated level, or is this distributed individually to the 17 colleges?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morse, it would be distributed to the colleges, and we are asking for match for those resources at the local college level.
Thank you.
Okay, on page 23, we just finished a brief conversation about what students need. Let's talk now about what workers need. This is the lifelong learning continuum. The recent recession caused a large number of jobs to be lost in the state of Oregon between January of 2001 and July of 2003. And that employment decline affected high-wage jobs to the rate of about 6%, average-wage jobs about 4%, and low-wage industries and jobs about 2%. So it was a cascading event, but the lower wage the job, the more of them stuck around. And although new jobs are being created in Oregon, jobs have grown at a slower rate for those average and high-wage industries than for low-wage industries. Still doesn't ameliorate the fact that businesses need skilled workers and workers need the skills. I'm going to highlight one program inside the department that focuses on skilling up or upskilling workers who currently are on the job, and that's the Employer Workforce Training Fund. This is, we use federal dollars, workforce dollars for this, and it does go directly to the business, and the business then chooses the provider that will produce the training for their incumbent workers. And the goals for this particular fund are living wages, so there is a mark about and a review criteria around what kind of training would be provided. We're looking for globally competitive businesses and efficient use of teams. So the outcomes are listed on page 25. Over 500 incumbent worker training projects have happened in the last 3 years, with 26,000 workers being trained. We also set aside some of those resources to fund things like the RV consortium that I spoke of earlier, grants of some size to help with that organization. 50% of the training that is done through the Employer Workforce Training Fund does come from community colleges. Others are other vendors, private vendors inside the organization. May do their own training.
Representative Edwards?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a private match required for these funds?
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, excellent question. Yes, there is a dollar-for-dollar match, and we're running at about 3-to-1 private sector match for these dollars.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
There is also policy package 113, which is Skill Up Oregon. This policy package is $10 million. It targets individuals who are not yet employed and would seek resources to target education and training for them to ensure that they are able to enter those average to high wage jobs that exist in our economy. The Skill Up Fund is, as I said, a $10 million request. It would flow through our current administrative structure, so we don't anticipate a lot of additional structure that would be necessary, although because it is new and it will require additional support at the local level, there are some positions that are attached to it. Additionally, we have Policy Package 112, which is the Workforce and Career Readiness Certification. This package would provide a readiness certificate for core employee ability skills required across industries and occupations. So it would not be specific to metals or plastics or food processing, but would really look across the range of industries in Oregon. The certificate information is collected in the aggregate, it could provide a base of information about the skill availability of Oregon's workforce, and it's currently used that way in a number of states. A company might be looking to come. My favorite example is the state of Virginia has a statewide workforce readiness certificate. When they have a company that is coming, they say, well, we're looking at area X. They go to their database, they put in area X by zip code, they pull up what's the skill level of the people in that area who have participated in this, and they have found it a way to communicate directly with business on not an anecdotal, but a rather direct way. This package was developed at the urging of the Oregon Workforce Investment Board, who would really like, not just the example I have given, but would really like to know what is the skill level, not just what is the degree level, but what is the skill level of Oregon's workforce. And that's also echoed by the State Board of Education as they look to renewing the high school diploma requirements. They are insisting that this work that we would do here would be aligned with that work, so that a student leaving high school may not be at exactly the same levels as someone who has spent 15, 20 years in the labor force, but that there should be a way to walk across to those so that they aren't at odds.
Mr. Chair, is there an assessment associated with this certificate that we can use to evaluate not only the performance of Oregonian participants, but also compare the results to other states nationally and potentially globally?
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, absolutely. It will be an assessment. We have not chosen the assessment. We are using focus groups to help us do that, and talking to vendors about what they can offer us that most closely fits what our two drivers, these two boards, have asked us to be responsive to. So, yes, it certainly could be a better comparative to other states.
Okay. I have a question. So of the two packages, 113, the skill up is for $10 million, and the 112 is for 1.1, yet the target impacts are pretty similar. Mm-hmm. So can you explain why that's the case?
Mr. Chair, one, I think the workforce and career readiness certificate will be not easier, but because it's a thing, it's a widget, it will come online sooner. Skill Up is really focused on individuals who don't have the skills to enter and be successful in the workforce right now. And that's not going to happen overnight. That's going to take time for them to build to that place. But I think marrying them together, we are expecting a positive impact on these performance measures.
Thank you.
So let's move to question number two. The first was all around, are Oregonians ready? Are they prepared for life, work, and careers? Now we'll talk about, are more Oregonians ready for post-secondary education? A little finer cut to that first question. And again, we have listed our performance measures and how we think we're doing on them. We lead off with GED with a sideways arrow. That's not necessarily because the number is trending any particular direction, but because we have a new way to collect this data, and we only have 1 year of information so far. So we could have put a big splot there, but we thought we'd just do a sideways arrow. And you can see that we have a red arrow for at-risk youth remaining or returning in school, having earned a diploma or a GED. That has gone from 72% last biennium to 68%. And the rest of them are trending in the right direction. Slide 29, more Oregonians have a high school diploma or their equivalent today than ever before. We're taking a look back to the 40s. We would hope it would be that way. We have Oregon compared in contrast to the U.S., Oregon being the lighter bar, and we are leading the U.S. in this particular measure. The trend is in the right direction, although we can't afford to let any of these people, even the 15% who in this graph are not yet holding a diploma, we can't leave them behind. Slide 30 is a snapshot of what we believe high school students need. And the response of community college and workforce development is to offer a variety of efforts to help students be successful. Several of the policy option packages can assist in this, the career readiness certificate, certainly the career pathways, and accelerated learning options. Inside the department, though, there is a program that I wanted to highlight, one that several of your members know fairly well, and that's the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps. It was enacted in 1987 by the Oregon legislature, and it is to emulate the federal CCC from the 30s. Over the past 15 years, it has served thousands of youth all across the state. It is funded with the lottery device tax and some other end state funds. It does serve disadvantaged youth. It's a combination of education, experiences with conservation, rehabilitation, and improving their natural, historical, and cultural resources throughout the state. slide 32 is just a picture of where the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps programs are across the state, and whether they're summer programs, programs that are supported by the Marine Board, Parks and Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, or the stewardship program, which is the year-round program. I think the most important and most consistent part of the Youth Conservation Corps program is that it integrates classroom and field-based learning experiences. Even though we do not have a program option package around accelerated learning options, it was important to note that community colleges have across the state have programs that prepare students for post-secondary education while they're still in high school. And the average in-district tuition right now is $63. A high school student will pay approximately $25 to have college credit transcripted, like Haley, transcripted, and move with them to the college. Last year, 115,000 credits were earned by students in high school. So if you take that 25 transcripting fee times each credit, it's $2,880,000. But if you took the 62, which is the tuition they would have paid, by that same number of credits, you get $7,200,000. So we figure we're saving Oregon students and families over $4 million a year by offering college accelerated college credit programs in high school or at the college that students are able to have access to. Slide 34 is just perhaps a reiteration of exactly what those programs are: dual credit, tech prep, as well as expanded options. And this is the slide that tells you in more detail you can walk away with those figures I just gave you. So we've talked about students, and let's talk a little now about adults that are served by community colleges who are in the workforce, and particularly those who aren't prepared for post-secondary training. Oregon has an increasingly diverse workforce, and that drives the need for adult basic education and English language education. On slide 36, Oregon currently receives about $11 million a year in federal resources to serve individuals who have low literacy skills or English, or who need English as a second language. We believe that actually serves or responds to about 5% of the literacy needs in the state. This slide gives you some of the facts about low literacy in Oregon. These are adults who are 16 years or older. Of the 392,000 adults with limited literacy, 23% are at or below the poverty level, and 30% are at 100% of the poverty level, and another 30% are 125% below the poverty level. Slide 37 looks at what's the participation in those programs, and almost half of the adult literacy programs are serving English as a second language. What's perhaps more troubling, at least to me, is that 43% of the individuals served in this program have an eighth grade or lower level of literacy. So half of the students are in basic skills, and in basic skills programs are employed, and another little less than half are unemployed, and some are not in the workforce. Slide 38 is a snapshot, if you will, of what we report to the Federal Department of Education about how our performance is in the state. Serve and report 7,000 people, if you add all these numbers together. The program currently serves about 21,000 people a year. So one of the things that the department took a look at was how successful are those students that were serving in adult basic education programs at the community college in making the transition to either pre-collegiate or collegiate work. We weren't very impressed with our results. So we found that students definitely struggle with moving from adult basic ed and gaining that level of literacy and being successful in the college environment. So we've commissioned a national expert to come and look across the nation at best practices and to look inside Oregon to do an internal review and to build and pilot at 6 community colleges a replicable model. There are models that exist in other states, and we actually have some very good models inside our state. So we're looking for what we call bridge and pre-bridge and college and career awareness programs to make sure that once those, say, those 21,000 students that we serve every year don't get lost, but actually do make their way successfully to the college experience. Slide 40 is, we of course have given it a funny little name, that's the Oregon Pathways for Adult Basic Skills, or OPABS. They're all those arrows are moving toward employment and ensuring that the college is assisting students in all the different ways that they can for success.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. I'm looking at 39 and 40 and the comments that you were making about the goal of adult basic skills. And I see on 40 the pink blocks refer to professional, technical, and occupational training as well as college prep. Mm-hmm. Could you make a few comments about that issue? The way your narrative didn't match the slide, and I think that part of what I'm thinking is that maybe the issue might be that trying to move some of these people onto college is the wrong goal, that perhaps they ought to be moved in a different direction.
Mr. Chair,
as in the pink blocks on the side.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart,
I'm just trying to understand how the program actually works,
right,
and make a suggestion if, in fact, it isn't working the way I think it might be.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, it is our expectation that it would include all kinds of education and training, that the student would have choice about which direction they went. It also could have an apprenticeship box. As the student is prepared for work beyond that is not at the collegiate level, and recent studies say that ready for work and ready for college are at approximately the same level of skill and ability. We're just trying to make sure that these students find their way to their next step as successfully as possible. One of the models is to have adult basic education delivered in the context of an occupation. Certainly, adult basic education is currently delivered in an applied way in the classroom, but this would step it up a notch to actually be for a particular occupation. And we're watching the state of Washington, who's currently has a project, actually it's more than a project now, a statewide initiative, they are finding increased success for these students. So absolutely would include all different avenues for the student.
Okay, may I just clarify, just to be sure that I understand. So when you say readiness for college, or words to that effect a minute ago, what you really meant was all of these options.
Mr. Chair,
have I got that right now?
Yes, you do.
Thank you.
Yes, you do. Ready for it all.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to talk a little bit about package 104. It's the CCWD Accountability and Education Enterprise Alignment package. This one does provide what we believe to be essential staffing capacity for the department to perform often critical and very time-sensitive programmatic and operational functions. This request keeps the personnel costs inside the department slightly over 1% of the agency budget. And as previously described in our initiatives and environmental factors, adequate and necessary staffing of these efforts is difficult for us. Yesterday I shared that long list of initiatives that have come to us from many different directions, and we find ourselves stretched very thin and not as responsive as our partners would like us to be. We do not have stellar customer service ratings, a performance measure that was added last year, session, and we would like to do better, and we would like to know more and be able to use the data that we have to make better decisions, and that's really the basis for this package. We also believe that, as we've discussed before, the Package 105 Career Pathways will support youth and adult learners. Slide 43 is just a reiteration of information that we have already shared. So I'm ahead of schedule. That's probably not a bad thing. I'm on to giving you a heads up of what will happen tomorrow, how our community colleges and workforce development programs providing results around the last three questions. Is Oregon post-secondary education affordable? These are probably questions you could already answer. Do more Oregonians have certificates and degrees? And is and are Oregon's people benefiting from this increase in education? I would like to draw your attention to that success story. You will have a picture, yeah? You do. There is more to the story than appears on this slide, and I'm sorry to say that Jesse can't be here to share it with you. And if you'll allow me, with the minutes I have left, I'd like to read it to you. This is the title of this is Josephine County Man Fills Educational Gap by Earning a GED. Figuring that action speaks louder than words, Jesse returned to the classroom last year to earn a GED through Rogue Community College and show his 14-year-old son that education matters. He had watched as Dylan, a freshman at Illinois Valley High, grew discouraged with school, and he'd been reminded of his own frustrating school experiences decades earlier when he fell behind, dropped out, and got a restaurant job. By 19, he was married and raising a child. This is his quote. Dylan had done well before, but high school seemed to be overwhelming. He kept saying he didn't like it. I'd always helped him with his homework, but one night he had a language arts assignment I couldn't figure out. I decided to go back and get my GED and we'd try to do it together. I thought that it would be encouraging and show him it's important to stay in school and do his best. So at 53, he signed up for preparation to take the General Education Development Exam at Rogue Community College, Illinois Valley Learning Center. I thought it would be just kids, he says, but I saw there were other older adults trying to do the same thing, just better their lives. The center's atmosphere is comfortable and students are respectful of each other. Teachers genuinely care about people and make it easy to approach them for help. As in the past, math was the hardest obstacle, but math is Dylan's strongest subject, and he has helped his dad with his homework. Other challenges included writing. I didn't have a clue what an essay was, he says. The instructor showed me that what my weaknesses were and how to approach them. They told me not to worry. It would make sense and fit together. I took them at the word, and it did. He finished preparing for the GED exam in 9 weeks, passing all five sections the very first time. That's phenomenal. You just got to know. There are people years in this GED process. His final quote, Dylan told me he's proud of me. He said, said Wimpy, who is considering now taking more classes at his local community college. And with that, I'll be happy to take questions. I'll see you tomorrow.
Well, I'm wondering if you'd be averse to, maybe you're not prepared to do this, but why don't we just keep going? Let's talk about tuition. Would you not want to do that? Would you prefer to do it tomorrow? I mean,
well, I actually have a question about something before you want to jump into tuition,
I want to, you know, if you'd rather wait till tomorrow, that's fine, but here we are. Anyway, go ahead, Senator Walker.
Thank you. There's a little bill, it's not mine, in my committee on career and technical education training. I don't like spending public money on things that we're already doing. So tell me, I was listening to your presentation and your slides, and you do tech prep credit, and I'm a part of that. So it's career and technical education courses, and we have expanded options, and we do other things. What are you doing about career and technical education? When would we need to study that program?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, I have not served on the workforce committee that you're referring to that brought forward this recommendation. I am aware of the bill from last session and the bill in your committee currently.
Mm-hmm.
I think the interest in the study is to look outside of Oregon for other models of how career and technical education is both designed and delivered. I believe the members of the committee believe that there was much to be learned from that review. They did not have a sufficiency of time. They were late in your organization to do that work, nor do I believe they had adequate resources to do the study that is planned in the bill before the committee.
I know I did hear that, but Mr. Chair, can I follow up?
Sure, follow up.
What is it, the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development, what does that department do for career and technical education now? How do you review that matter? How do you prepare for it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, I would say the primary piece, at least at the state level, is the federal Carl Perkins dollars that come to the state. The state of Oregon, through the State Board of Education, chooses to split that resource 50-50 between high schools and the community colleges. Again, we're one of the few states that doesn't even split. In many states, the high school portion is much larger. But we have a history of this equality of the split, and that's because we have great partnerships between high schools and community colleges around 2+2 programs, which is 2 years of high school, 2 years in the college, finishing with a professional technical degree. The department's role around professional technical education is one, technical assistance, program approval. A college will want to build, like welding is way overused, but it is a professional technical program, and if a college wants to offer that program, there's a set of criteria and work that is done at the department level, and then the State Board approves offering through the local community college. So there's a process at the college level to build that curriculum with local businesses to ensure it's responsive to community needs. When they have built that package, then they, it goes through their process, through their board approval, and then it comes to our department. We do a review, and then the board, if you will, blesses it, and it's offered. That's sort of our, and the Carl Perkins, the federal Carl Perkins resources are not designated for students. They are designated to build these programs and to provide technical assistance for instructors and at the college level. Okay. So that's, I hope that helps.
Yeah, that helps me a lot, Mr. Chair and Ms. Press-Brawley. That helps me a great deal, and I'd like to know if we can get a number on how much money that brings into the program every year, what the split is. It's a 50-50 split, so I guess I could figure that out if you just tell me you get, you know, $10 million. I know $5 million goes here and $5 million goes there. But, yes, since it's all federal money, it just seems to me it ought to stay with federal money, and I'm not quite sure why we'd need any state money in that. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker will bring back that information.
Well, I don't know. Now we have, we're missing three senators and a representative, so maybe it's, you were prepared for tomorrow, but go on day three. So
I didn't bring my little cheat sheet, so I could stumble my way through it, but you'd be embarrassed, and so would I.
No. Are there any other questions or comments on it?
See, I needed this time yesterday, so I didn't have to blitz.
Is there anything that you want to go back to from yesterday? I don't know. We did go through it pretty fast, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I think that the conversation that we had at the end of the committee hearing yesterday about course sections and reductions and enrollment really were a fine finish to the day. And even though we didn't talk specifically about the last 8 or 10 slides, I'm feeling pretty comfortable that you got my message and I got yours.
Representative Barnhart, Mr. Chair, again, I wanted to thank and two for the responses to our questions. I haven't finished reading it, but it looks pretty thorough to me as a in response to the questions we asked, and I appreciate the information.
You're most welcome.
One thing we did discuss right at the beginning, we discussed a little bit, so thank you for the questions you asked. Okay. So, yeah, I'm always comfortable in my class when I teach a class. You know, sometimes you're finished. Let's go. So, and the full Ways and Means Committee has to go to Corvallis. And
there you go.
So, I guess.
A gift of time.
Yes. So, with that, I will close the public hearing on 5012, and we are adjourned. Thank you very much.